Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. Today's guest is someone who has done what most founders dream of and then did it all over again, differently. This trainer co-founded Intercom, scaled from $1 million to $1 billion, unicorn, and then pulled off a rare move, rebuilding the company for the AI era. The result is Finn, Intercom's AI customer service agent, now handling 28 million queries for 5,000 plus companies. Des is also an angel investor in 100 plus startups, from Notion to Synthesia, and a sharp observer of what makes companies win globally. Today, we're talking about unicorn scale lessons, AI transformations, and where European founders can still win big. Des, such a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Awesome. Des, you know, when most founders dream of becoming a unicorn, you decided to rebuild one. Why?
I think we didn't have a choice. When AI happened, like November 2022, mm-hmm. Our options were basically like, and we work in customer service. So, everyone said like the biggest obvious impact of generative AI was definitely going to be the customer service world. So our option was like, let that happen to us and let somebody else come in and, steal all the customers and, ultimately get all the revenue and, win the category or be the company that does it. So it wasn't like we had a choice or at least retrospectively, it certainly looks like that. At the time, it felt like we had a bit of a choice. It wasn't that obvious that AI was going to be that big, but we still had a decision to make. And thankfully, we were able to make it pretty quickly.
Nice. So what's the first thing you did to make Intercom truly AI, AI first?
Well, the beginning of the journey, we built out, we had to like dip our toe in the water. I think we were the first company to have any generative AI features in production in the wild, like for real. And the first things we built was just inside of our help desk product. We have an inbox where like support representatives would talk to customers. And we built out some basic features there for some of their most common workflows. So summarize the conversation, translate and reply into a different language, expand upon a point. So we built that out first, and that was really us just kind of like running water through the pipes, if you like. We said, hey, well, there's all this generative AI stuff, that's cool, and there's all these customer conversations, that's cool. Can we see how generative AI can help customer conversations? So the first thing we did was about maybe 4 or 5 weeks after ChatGPT dropped, we basically launched these features to the wild, and we got kind of a lot of credit or praise for it at the time. That was, in some sense, we thought that was like a short project sprint. I think we've just been on that short sprint now for 3 years or so.
Des, what's a mistake teams make when they kind of add AI to a product?
I think the two most common mistakes, and I don't mean to sound like Goldilocks here, but one mistake is they don't go far enough. So they take something that's like too unambitious. Mm-hmm. Usually what that looks like is they add some sparkly buttons or like, buttons with those little like lightning bolts or whatever on them. And they say, hey, we can now give you a summary of the project or some nonsense like that. As in, they use AI in an extremely safe way to do something no one ever bothered doing anyway. Mm. And they call that like moving to AI, and they try and make a big celebration about that. And they somehow just think that they're like checking a box of AI, like, yes, we are also an AI company now. Mm-hmm. And I think the downside of that is you're not being ambitious. Some new startup is thinking far more aggressively than you are. They will solve all the real problems with AI while you're busy building nonsense. And you don't actually get any of the skills or learnings of trying to be an AI company. The other mistake is on the other end, where you kind of go too deep, too wild, and too unchained to reality. And you see a lot of companies, not just startups, make this mistake, which is they basically, they dream very big, and mm-hmm. they produce a nice demo, perhaps a fake video, or perhaps an actual genuine, what we would call a golden path demo. And by that, we mean there's a specific set of steps that if you take them in the right order, all the AI will work. And So they produce a really compelling example of how good this could be. They make a screencast, they launch their product, maybe they even raise some funding, and they tell the world, this is what we're building. And it is only maybe a couple of weeks later when they start getting back into trying to make the product work in a reliable way at a quality level that customers want, that they realize they've actually bitten off a lot more than they can chew. And the AI just frankly isn't there for them. And as I said, like, startups make this mistake all the time. They promise the world and then they promise you like automatic novel generation. And then what they give you is, we can summarize a paragraph or something. But, you know, it's not just startups. Like, I would say a lot of Apple's missteps with Apple Intelligence are like this as well. They promised that this, you know, tech could like read your email and take actions and get ahead of you and like send emails on your behalf and all that. I think it's only when they got into the cold light of day and they realized, oh, there's security risks here, there's latency risks here, there's quality and reliability risks here, that they found themselves delaying and delaying and delaying the launch because I don't think they can catch up with what they promised. And so I think the two mistakes are going too conservative and then marketing too aggressive.
Yeah, 100% agree. And generally, with AI now, there's like a big culture shift that's coming as well. So how do you get every team, not just engineering, to think AI first?
The first thing you have to do is kind of explain. You shouldn't have to do this if your team are proper technologists. They should be following the trends in the industry anyway. But you have to explain what AI actually means and what it's actually doing to the world, and then to their specific discipline and what it means. So to give you some examples, like at Intercom, our head of design, Emmett, basically put out a request/mandate that every designer in his org must ship production code to make a meaningful change to the product. And by August, just gone 2 weeks ago, they had done that. And so that's like a team of whatever, 20, 30 designers, all of whom are now contributing engineering changes. I think there's a few things there. You have to paint a picture of where we're going and make it seem exciting and ambitious. And then make sure that you've got the right people on board, because I think if you just take design specifically, in the design community, there's a lot of like hesitancy around AI because people are precious about their pixels. Whereas I think really great designers just care about impact, and Emmett has curated the team of designers who care about impact. So you have to make sure that you have the right team. And then you just have to say, this is what we're doing. To give you some other examples, like our CTO, Dara, sent out an email saying, we are going to use AI to double productivity, to double the rate at which Intercom can produce high quality software. Within product management, we've said hey, we should be using AI to analyze every customer interview, analyze every piece of product feedback. We should be ruthless. We should never miss anything again. We now have the capability, we now have the intelligence to read every single thing that anyone has ever said about any feature in Intercom and to filter and facet that as much as we want. So let us use that really intelligently. Mm-hmm. And I think these are all, to my mind, you have to make declarations of intent as a leader in your company. And then you just have to make sure that your team itself is up for it, that they're excited by this and that they're not hesitant or they're not going to delay or dilute your motivation. You have to be really clear that this is what we're doing.
So that's from no AI to now AI native. What's the hardest trade-off you had to make during this transition?
It's extremely risky and painful to rip up your roadmap and build a load of stuff that no one is asking for, because you know what the future looks like. Yeah. And as a result, there's a lot of confusion, specifically customers who thought they were getting feature number 127 to our old incumbent help desk product aren't getting it. And they might never know, because honestly, AI is literally where the future is. So there's a whole cost to ripping up your roadmap. That's a big trade-off. Internally, it can be quite disruptive because, the org chart we previously had was broken down around what are the core areas of the product and who owns what, and each area had its own roadmap. we had to break all that up to get an entire team of people working specifically on Finn. And again, we're still dealing with the mess that, and like this is 2 years later, it's still organizationally a bit of a mess. You have to embrace the chaos is the best advice I could give. I think I find a lot of startups, it might be a post Zerp era, it might be a post 2020 thing. A lot of startups spend a lot of time trying to fight to get a very harmonious, peaceful, steady ship that's predictable and reliable and won't shock you too much. And I think that's the exact opposite of what you need in this AI era. Like, everything changes all the time and you have to roll with it. And by roll with it, I mean consume the new information, work out what its impact will be on the current roadmap, the current thinking, the current end game you're shooting for, and adapt and react and do so extremely quickly, knowing that you're going to give yourself and others around you whiplash, because you just have to do it. So I think the pain is all necessary pain. You have to be willing to take a bit of pain to kind of adapt to these like tectonic shifts in the industry. There's no steady course through a storm, you know?
Yeah. So true. So true, Des. And now let's talk about Finn a bit. So Finn's now handling millions of queries. What's a moment that made you think, yep, this is working?
Oh, I mean, there's been loads of them, but like very early on, a customer asked, like, so when we were first testing out Finn, a customer sent in a question through our messenger, and I think it was like a 6-part question. It was like they basically dumped in all of their context and they didn't realize they were going to be talking to AI. They thought they were going to be talking to a human. So they're like, hey, I'm asking you all of this at once and I want complete answers to everything. And I think it was like 6-part question. And I even think there was a part A and a part B, like, and if it does do this, what happens? And if it does do this, what happens? And Finn replied in like, I want to say like 8 seconds or something like that. Maybe it was 11. It was a little bit slower back then. With like an extremely detailed and well-cited answer to all 6.5 of the questions, including his like, if this, then that, it followed the logic of that. And the customer was like, holy shit, what is this thing you guys have built? And we immediately obviously the examples, because a lot of us were just at the time just eyeballing what Finn was doing to see if it really was as good as we thought. And that became a kind of a famous example where we were like there is not a single human on our customer service team who could have delivered that answer, because that it was asking questions about different parts of the product under different hypothetical situations. And it was like, obviously no one's going to do it in like six seconds or whatever. So that was the point where I was like, right, the world will never be the same again, or at least the world of customer service will never be the same again now that this is possible. And so that was probably the first big holy shit moment. There's been loads since, but that was one where some of the funny ones we see are like, you read through a whole conversation, like, well, that's really impressive. And it's only like a couple of days later, you realize you were reading the English version, but that whole conversation took place across 2 different languages. Like it started off in Mandarin and ended up in something else, you know, and you're like, wow, because you kind of forget Finn works the weekends. Finn knows everything about every aspect of Intercom. Finn speaks every language. Finn knows who the customer is, knows what the customer is in the middle of doing. Finn can take actions in the back end. It can upgrade you or downgrade you. So when you read some of these conversations, you're like, wow, like I don't think Intercom could have achieved that outcome without Finn. Like, it's not even a case of like, is this better, faster, cheaper? It's like, this just wasn't happening before and now it is. But there have been numerous examples.
Amazing. Amazing. I love it. Des, I wanted to ask you a bit about your angel investor side. You know, as an angel investor in like 100 plus companies, what AI pitch makes you lean in, or generally what pitch makes me lean in?
Historically, I was always a sucker for a great product solving a real problem. And if I could see how the product solved a problem, that was usually enough for me to write the check. The weakness in that old world was that I didn't have the time to do a proper like landscape review, because you could have a great, like say like Riverside, which we're using to record this podcast.
Yeah.
Riverside is a great product. And if somebody gave me the pitch for here's what we're doing and here's how it solves a problem, I'd be like, yes, that's great. What I never had the time to do is like, I should go and say like, but is it the best? Like, or you know, cause often I've definitely had the experience where like, I've invested, I've written the 20 grand check, it's gone in into the company, and I get the first investor update, and it says something like, well, our competitor is actually called like Veed.io, and they're beating us in follow. And I'm like, oh shit, I forgot you guys had competitors. And it's only then I realize I should have probably should have invested in the other company, you know? So that was the old way. In the AI era, I think it's so tricky to work out like what's the right way to approach this. But like what I like to see is a lot, like again, I want to see a product solving a problem, but I want to see really deep and difficult AI. And to give you an example of a company I am an investor in, Granola, you've probably heard of them. They're based in London. They're a AI meeting note taker, although their ambition is far greater than that. I think it's very easy to autocomplete on the idea. AI summarize meetings. I get it. No problem. And you think, well, surely ChatGPT can do this. Isn't this just like, you know, some sort of whisper speech to text type transcription that gets dumped into GPT and gets summarized? And you'd think that until you actually use Granola and then you use like, you know, Gemini or any of the other tools out there that claim to do this. And you realize Granola is just way, 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 way better. And why is Granola way better? Well, this is where the deep AI comes in. Because when you look at the complexity of what's going on under the hood, it's they're doing a lot of work. So if I have a meeting with you, a normal meeting AI product will basically be like, right, let's just listen and transcribe. A great meeting AI product will do things like, who are these people? What companies do they work for? What's going on in their personal life? What have they been saying on Twitter? What recent product launches have they made? Have they spoken before? Is this the first time they've ever met? And it will do all this as research to even just inform how to summarize the conversation. So that when I say, yeah, we're really excited about Finn, the meeting note taker knows that Finn is a product. It's not a person. And it knows, you know, and so it, all of that context matters so much when you're trying to write a fateful summary and actually infer things. And that's just like 1% of the sort of magic that Granola brings. Like we see this a lot with Finn. Like people think Finn is just a simple Q&A bot. Whereas, as I said earlier, like the depth of what Finn does in terms of disambiguation, clarification, abstraction, all of which to do proper customer support is really necessary. So what I want to see is like an AI product that's got really deep AI and good expertise in AI, as in like good evals where they really know that they're solving the problem, solving a real problem that people really have. And then lastly, if I have the time, I should look and see if there's any competitors.
Nice. I like it. Des, are European AI startups competing on the same playing field as the US, or is it a different game entirely?
I think that what I notice in San Francisco is the companies there tend to be tackling bigger, like they're either like all the model companies, bar Mistral, are basically in San Francisco. All of the like massive, massive applications like Cursor, Perplexity, etc., are all San Francisco. I think where Europe's doing quite well is at the application layer. I think like Granola are doing well. I think Synthesia are doing well. I think 11x are doing well. Like there are a lot of people who have taken a very important problem and they've applied a lot of AI to solve it really well. Legora for law in Sweden or Norway. There's a chunk of them, right? Like where I think they're like genuinely building great software at the application layer. And I think that's good. Like I don't think they're solving the same at the same point in the overall tech stack. And as a result, I think the funding is lower. But like, only a little bit lower. Like say Lovable's doing pretty well too. Again, pretty European by most standards.
Yeah.
So I think Europe's doing pretty well. I shiver whenever people try this constant comparison with where Silicon Valley is today. I think the right way to compare Europe and Silicon Valley is not like the state by state, but it's like, what's the trajectory of Europe? And if you transpose that back, let's be honest and say like 30 years, are we on the same path that Silicon Valley was on? Because I just think like they could just be further along. Like people often say like, oh, we have no $1 trillion companies in Europe, right? And that's true. And they've got like, I think, four of them in the United States. But We also have very few old companies in the tech industry. Like Spotify is probably one of our oldest. It's like 15 or 20 years old. Like, you know, Apple's a trillion-dollar company. Yeah. Apple was born in the 70s. It's like these things are not the same. So I think you have to make the right comparison. Overall, with the exception of AI regulation, where I think Europe still has a huge proclivity to step on its own feet and trip itself up. But in general, I actually think Europe's applying itself pretty well in the AI application layer. And we're seeing some great companies come out of Europe. I think we should be proud of that, like to the degree that we identify as European.
I like your take on this a lot. What's the most exciting AI opportunity nobody's fighting for yet? Well, what do you see?
Yeah, I have to say, I struggle with this because inevitably, whenever I answer you questions like this, I'll get a shitload of pitches for like vaguely related things. But let me have a think and say, where do I really see opportunities at the moment? I think there's probably a lot of stuff to be built in developer tooling that isn't just the IDE or the Claude Code type thing. So I think like when you look at the chain of events of a piece of code going live to production, I think there's still a lot of like grunt work either in QA or testing, like end user evaluation, acceptance testing, whatever you might want to do. I think there's a lot that can be built there that would be like just genuinely useful. I think there's other stuff that I lament at how much engineering time we waste doing things like minor upgrades of like, hey, let's go from React 1 to React 2 or whatever the version it's on, or Rails 6 to Rails 7 or 7 to 8 or whatever. I feel like that's a directly attackable AI problem that we should be able to solve. And it should be like, you know, run this script to just sync to update and everything will work or whatever. I'd love to see that type of thing happen. More generally, in the consumer space, I'm surprised. I think it's because all of the big dogs have been so slow. Like, isn't it shocking that there's no generative AI powered Alexa yet? I know it's on the way, but like we're heading into our fourth Christmas or third Christmas or whatever, and there's still not a dominant Gen AI device you put in your home. I think, you know, and in all of the home accessories, like your Ring camera should be using Gen AI to work out who's at your door, so you don't just get a notification saying the doorbell rang. It should say Jenny's at the door or whatever. All that shit needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Then on the consumer side, let's just say, like with the exception maybe of another great European company, the team at Ammo, who are building cool stuff like Sugar, their messenger, and Bump, their like sort of Zenly product. But with the exception of them, I haven't seen a great AI messenger yet. As in a messenger born in the AI world. And what does that look like? Well, it means, imagine a messenger where me and you can chat and we agree to go for dinner and you just say, at Booker, please book restaurant, blah, blah, blah. And it just does it and comes back. You know, the only company I've seen scratch at this is a company called Continua, and they're based in the States. But like in general, I think like for like, you know, where's the AI Instagram, right? Like we've seen all these cool visual filter effects being done through AI, whether it's like Studio Ghibli or any of those types of effects. Why can't I take a photo and be given a set of options of all of those effects? Like, I just think it's been slow to see the full uptake of modern Gen AI into consumer software. Mm. It'll get there, but it's just been a bit slow.
Des, before we move on to the next kind of part of the conversation, which is a rapid fire that I always play with my guests. When do you like see Finn and yourself in like 5 years from now? What do you want to achieve?
Finn should be like the customer agent for all customer experiences that happen between an internet business and its customers. And I think it will do it better, faster, and cheaper than any alternative. And because of that, I see Intercom being a massive business that powers that. I suspect Finn and whatever the future of Finn is will kind of consume the help desk over time. Like not fully, but like I think the help desk will be like less relevant in the future than it was in the past. It's an obvious thing to say. And then myself, I hope to still be here as part of it.
Nice. I like the answer. Des, so this is the time in the show when I usually play a little game with my guests. It's like rapid fire.
Cool.
So I shoot quick questions at you, give me quick answers. Are you up for it?
Yeah, totally.
All right, so let's go. The first app you check in the morning?
It will be whatever the notification is on my screen that looks important. So it could be Signal or it could be Slack. If it's neither of those, then it will probably be email.
All right. AI startup everyone should watch?
I will say Granola.
All right. Book that's influenced you the most?
How Will You Measure Your Life by Professor Clay Christensen.
Nice. If you could have a dinner with any founder, living or dead, who would it be and why?
It will be hard to get away from Steve Jobs here. Like I could try and come up with a better answer, but like I'd struggle. And the why is because I think, would say other founders I admire, like say Larry Ellison or Bill Gates, whatever. I feel like they've been productive enough about how they think and how their mind works, such that I've gotten most of the value that I might get from a dinner. Whereas I feel like Steve left as an enigma. We still don't really understand exactly how he saw the world, why he saw things the way he saw them. I feel like that you get more juice out of those discussions.
Definitely. Like conversation with Steve Jobs, like come on, what can be more interesting than that? Now I'm going to give you three sentences to complete. Here goes the first one. In 3 years, AI will...
be the default starting point of the majority of human behaviors.
The next unicorn will be?
I want to say Finn, but that's not a great answer. it possibly already is. The next unicorn will be. In 3 years, the next unicorn will be a company with less than 100 employees. No, yeah. That's nonsense. Sorry, that's already happened. Would I say less than 10? Yeah, I'll say less than 10. A company with less than 10 employees.
Less than 10, exactly. I even wanted to say the next unicorn will be built by just one person.
I feel like, I don't know, I think that one person would just get lonely. That's just, yeah.
true. Des, last one. Describe the, it might be the toughest one. For some people, it's the toughest one. For some people, it's... not that tough. So let's see. Describe the rest of your life in 5 words.
Actualization, family, love, vacation,
nice,
peace.
Amazing. Des, thank you so much. Everyone clap for Des. It's a wrap. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today. It's been a huge pleasure. I love the conversation. I think people will love it as well. Thanks so much. And I hope to see you in Barcelona soon. And we have some play date with our kids.
Let's do it.